Check. Chaz, what are we doing with the mic? Where's the mic?
You're listening to Grab the Mic with Colin and Chaz. All right, guys, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of Grab the Mic.
I'm here too, guys. It's Colin here, the co-host. I want everybody just to take a second and guess to the reason why we haven't had an episode, I guess, as frequently as we did before. Just take a second, think about what the common denominator is, and yeah, you got it. Chaz went on another vacation.
God, dude.
He also stole $50 from me, but that's a whole other story.
Jesus, man.
We got a camera.
You know what I want to talk about, dude? I forgot to ask you about this today. Is this not the hottest that it's ever freaking been? I swear to God that it is.
Dude, I don't know. When I've been at work, literally, it feels like I'm sweating more than I used to at football practice.
I got in the car today. I got in the car like 3:30 or so. You know when you get in your car and it's so hot that you feel like you literally can't breathe? Like, it almost, like, takes the freaking air out of your...
You got leather seats in it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's so freaking... Well, no, actually, they're not.
They're not leather?
It's freaking... But it was so hot. It was 105 degrees when I got in the car.
Jesus. It said yesterday, it felt like, with the humidity and everything, it felt 108 when I was at the pool.
Christ's sake.
Well, yeah, guys, I just stayed underwater the whole time.
Well, yeah, I just took a dive to the deep end.
So I snorkel and I just hung out for a little bit.
So we got a little episode coming right here it's initially referred to as, I guess, I forgot the news reporting, but that it's called like a ghost house pretty much. This place, it's called the Demon House to people that know it now. It's in Gary, Indiana. And we really wanted to get into this because Zach Bagans, who is obviously the lead investigator on the Ghost Adventure show that we love and talk about so much.
I just looked it up, but the popular name to it before Zach was involved is The Exorcisms of LaToya Ammons.
Yeah. So. And that was like
was all over the news. When exactly. So if anybody remembers, it's probably the most recent exorcism that's taking place in the United States that had the publicity that it did, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, but anyway, Zach owned the house, I should say. And so that's kind of how we found out about this whole story and kind of looked up some stuff and watched a documentary on YouTube, which y'all need to check out. It's insane. But so we're just going to kind of dive into that story today and kind of spew the shit along the way and see what we can come up with before we
get carried away. How was your trip? How was the beach trip? How was Charleston?
So, dude, I was like, actually, oh god, I was so pissed. I haven't told you this because I figured you were gonna laugh at me. So when I booked the trip, so like it was me and my girlfriend. We went on a little 4-day trip to Charleston, and so I booked it on like Airbnb. We got like an Airbnb in it, and I booked it, and it said Charleston. So I'm thinking like, okay, sweet, we'll be like near downtown. So it turns out we were in North Charleston, which is like the cool of the, like, it was like staying in the hood. It was bad. Like it was like the low, it was not good. Like very, very, very scared. Like you didn't want to go out to your car. Like it was not good. But so I got there and I was like, dude, this sucks. I was like, but you know what? We're going to make a good trip out of it. Anyway, so basically we just did the typical, it was laid back, dude. We just went out to eat and stuff and.
Was there a lot of people, like, with everything going on with the corona or whatever, or?
So, like, usually, like, I don't know if people, like, anybody that's been to Charleston. So, like, there's this marketplace in the center of downtown. And that was, like, it's usually, like, popping, obviously. It's, like, I mean, it's a happening city, like, for the most part. But, I mean, with everything going on right now, it's, like, everybody was wearing masks. Like, and there was hardly anybody set up in the market because, like, nobody was interested in even going in. There's probably, like, you could count the number of people on the streets, which is just insane. But, we ended up staying for 4 days. The weather was good. It was just, like, 110 degrees every day, which is insane, but.
Chaz got he chose to do something that I don't agree with while he was up there, and. I'm going to bring it to our listeners just because I think that they're going to be on the same side as me. But he's probably going to be moving, guys. He's I think he's gonna go.
It's set in stone.
Yeah, it's set in stone that he's he just doesn't like Georgia, and that that goes for everybody in it, the sports teams.
No, that's not true.
He's a real cock now.
So a little synopsis on that. What a good vocab word that I just used. Synopsis. You know
what I'm talking about? Yeah, typical Gamecock.
So basically, this happened like within the last, I guess, month or two. I actually got a job offer to come up to South Carolina. It's about 2 hours up the road. It's right up Highway 85 and to store manage a car wash in Greer, South Carolina. So I hopped on that, and I will be moving up to South Carolina in late August, actually, and I'll be back and forth. So most everything will stay the same. We'll still be doing the pods, and even if we aren't, you know, in the first couple like weeks that I'm there, if we can't really see each other the first couple weeks just for me working and training and stuff, we're gonna be bringing pods like through phone and stuff, which would be really fun. And it's gonna be,
I think that'll be a cool little, I think that'll new be cool element.
And we'll be able to add some people in, maybe add like maybe a little multi phone call back and forth, and we'll have like a host. We'll end up getting mics obviously at some point that we can connect to like headphones and stuff and make a lot easier. But that's the little predicament we're in. What have you been up to, man?
Just sweating my ass off at work. Honestly. Nothing. Hunting season's coming up, so I've been pretty focused on that.
Dude, tell me about the freaking deer. Jesus.
So, I've just recently started putting all the trail cameras back out for any people that hunt. You know, I usually start getting those back going around the 4th of July, really. Right a couple weeks later than we normally do, but we put all the cameras out, got some corn out to see what we're looking like and what's, see if we got any shooters this year and what it's all looking like. And I've fortunately, thankfully, have gotten one of the biggest deer that,
freaking massive.
Dude, like, one of the biggest deer that we've ever had on trail camera.
How many points were you able to tell?
He's only a typical 8, but
he's way bigger. It is big, though.
Well, it's not so much like the points. He's a typical 8, and he's
got a massive rack.
Yeah, and he's probably, I mean, he's up there. Yeah. And it's the biggest typical 8 I've ever seen as far as, like, been able to hunt, not counting, like, photos of deer in Wisconsin or whatever, but he's a stud. He's probably about a 5-6-year-old buck, just by judging on the few photos that we've gotten of him so far. But got another one who's actually a 12-pointer that's super tall, and he's going to be a stud as well. So that's what I've been focused on, and usually all my time has been going to that since
Hell yeah.
Chaz wants to go to South Carolina. I'm probably just going to have to find other hobbies. But no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm just gonna find some new friends.
When deer season's approaching, or any real season for that matter, that's what we, especially with dropping Drake and everything like that, we got to get our butts in the woods. Year, but
a lot of stuff to advertise.
Super, super fun stuff to do.
By the way, y'all hit up.
Sorry, just got a phone call, guys.
Yikes!
Guess I'll just have to call them back later.
What was that? Big Time Rush.
It's definitely the Jonas Brothers.
Dude.
You got a problem with the Jonas Brothers?
Listen to this, dude. Somebody posted a picture of Big Time Rush the other day. I didn't remember that was even a thing until they posted that the other day. I guess I forget a bunch of shit, like, from childhood.
I guess, what, you got a problem with Burning It Up by the Jonas Brothers?
You almost cracked when you said it. Yeah, you got a problem with Burning It Up? I'm gonna be honest with you, dude. I don't know. You might throw some shade at me. I was not a Disney kid, dude. Yikes. Weren't they Disney? I was very much a Nickelodeon kid.
Camp Rock.
Camp Rock, man. Yeah, I was so much more into freaking Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network, especially Adult Swim, dude. Because I was like such an adult.
Drake and Josh, you can't beat
Drake
it.
Drake and Josh, you can't beat it, man. iCarly, dude. Kidding me? I was like, but peak. Drake and Josh was the best, though. They're rebooting that.
Are they really?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
No shit. Well,
I mean, hell, who knows right now with everything going on, but that's what I heard.
Jesus. Drake Bell was in a ditch.
That's it. I'm drinking iced coffee at 10:06, and Colin's got a Bang energy drink. And this is PM, not AM.
Yeah, just because we wanted to get this podcast out to you guys, and I think we operate best when we're functioning on this stuff.
We usually take a shot of whiskey, which is that's where it's at usually.
That's when we had our best podcast.
Yeah, we were really rolling, but.
All right, so let's get into the story. We got some great feedback on our last one as far as I guess documented cases that we wanting to cover and stuff.
You're scaring some people.
Yeah, we had a lot of people like the whole Instagram.
Yeah. If y'all aren't following us, go hit us up on Instagram and grab the mic _pod.
Just go ahead and give us some good feedback on there. Give us some comments. And,
also, like and subscribe. Leave us a review on Apple. We're also, by the way, whenever I say that, we're on like Google Podcasts, Spotify. Apple's where we get primarily a lot of our listeners, but we're on so many platforms. But
Apple's just
that's like the main one we kind of go off of. A lot of people use Spotify though, so if you got friends that have Spotify and they can't listen to the pod on Apple, shoot them that. So,
but anyways, so like Chaz said at the beginning of the podcast, the story we're going to be covering today is the Demon House, and it was known for a huge possession case that took place there that was kind of controversial and stuff like that. A lot of people didn't believe in it. A lot of people just thought just publicity and different stuff. The same elements that go into every, I guess, paranormal case that gets, I guess, brought up in a global standpoint, but or a national standpoint. Anyways, Zach Bagans eventually purchases the house and conducts his own investigation there and makes a documentary, and it's literally called The Demon House. If you want to look into it and watch it, it's a super good documentary. Really, really good. It's insane. And
it's literally, like, he'll tell you from the get-go, it's an actually, like, well, you know, if you believe in it, he says it's literally curse, which is...
Right, okay. It's...
I watched it the night with my girlfriend. She was not having it. She hates when I do this stuff. She wants me to stop doing this like ghost hunting stuff. I'm like, well, too bad.
Yeah. Our main goal is to play a Ouija board and rub our hands on her back before she can see it.
Dude, so the other day, so Tori's my girlfriend. Good God, dude. We were sitting at this place and I sent Colin a picture. It was when we were still in Charleston. And for some, I don't even know why, but they had a Ouija board in this place. And I just shot Colin a picture of it because we always joke about playing with it. And, she goes, this is her exact words. She goes, if you mess with one of those, I will break up with you. I was like, Jesus.
Could you imagine explaining that to all your family? Why'd you and Tori broke up?
I've been going on like 5 years. Like, what the hell's going on with that?
Yeah, I played with a Ouija board.
So.
Played a Ouija board, and then she told me to stop, so I rubbed my hands on her back and tried to rub it off on her. Picked up the air around it and started throwing it towards her.
So, dude, when we get into it, we'll kind of get farther into that, but some of the stuff that was on this freaking documentary, she was like, hell no.
It's pretty intense.
It's insane, dude. And it's like, I like to think that it's 100% accurate. I mean, like, when we talk about Zach, like, Zach's, like, main thing, even on, like, his own show, like, Ghost Adventures, he'll be, like, anything that happens, which me and Colin do the same thing, he'll find a good way to debunk it. Which basically just means he tries to find ways that it's not ghosts, like, his primary focus. And then if it's unexplainable, he'll make sure that
he'll try to find any person who's, I guess, I don't want to say good, but...
That takes it serious.
They try and find any...
That wants to find good evidence.
Yeah, they want to find... But they also want to find any explanation that's not ghost.
Yeah.
That way you're not crying wolf, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that way, if you debunk everything else, and it is, it just makes it that much sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we can get started. I want to get started with the actual family case before Zach was even involved, just because it's some of the craziest stuff that I've read and... research and stuff like that as far as paranormal stuff goes. But and y'all pay attention to this kind of stuff, and all these cases that we do that have anything to do with demonic or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
they have a lot of the same characteristics, and that's just so interesting to me, and that's also, I guess, validates the stories and stuff like that. So,
and we harp on that a lot because, like, it's something that, like, whenever we talk about demonic stuff, like, I mean, even like the way that, like, my girlfriend was, like, freaking out or whatever, it is kind of like you can't not take it serious, because it's pretty insane, especially if, like, something's happening, like, within your family, like, per se, that's, like, pertains to demonic stuff. Probably should take it pretty serious.
Yeah,
I mean, it's no joke.
I guess what always gets me is there's so many, especially down here in the South, there's so many people who are Christian and who are they go to church every single Sunday, but as soon as you bring up something that could possibly be demonic, oh no, that's not real.
Yeah, there's no way.
That's not real. It's in the but it's in the Bible.
I was gonna say it's in the Bible. Yeah.
Literally, if there's good, if you believe in the good, then there's definitely the bad.
There's definitely so, bad.
But that's a whole other topic for another
day. Yeah.
But all right, so The Amon, all right, so I guess I want to get this clarified first before I start going into the details. This is the Amon's family, and if the Amon's mother is Rosa, and the grandmother would be Campbell. And they were both interviewed after all this, and primarily the one who was, I guess, telling the whole story about what happened and who was open enough to...
The grandmother.
Yeah, it was the grandmother who told...
And that's what you see in the documentary, too.
Right. But anyways, on November 2011, the Amon's family moved into a rental house in the Carolina Street in Gary, a quiet lane lined with a small one-story home. This activity started to happen almost as soon as they entered the house, from what is reported. They said that as soon as they got in the house, that a swarm of flies
took over the front porch.
Took over everywhere. And they eventually got inside the house, and they killed and killed and killed all these flies, and they just kept coming back. And they
which is a lot like The Exorcist, if you've ever seen The Exorcist, which is insane.
And a lot of... It's also a lot like the Haunting in Connecticut, which I'm sure we'll do eventually.
Yeah.
That same thing happened to them.
For sure.
But, and I think it also happened in...
it's basically in all demonic things for the most part.
Yeah, the devil in Connecticut.
Kind of thing that you're dealing with devil or demonic-wise, kind of follows up with that. So
that was originally the first thing that happened. That they didn't think paranormal at first. It's just once everything else started happening, they put the pieces together. Mm-hmm. They just knew it wasn't normal for all the flies. Because, like, you could get away from the house and there was none.
Yeah.
So, anyways, one night after shortly after they moved in, Campbell and Amon's both said that occasionally they would hear steady footsteps coming from the basement, mm-hmm. basement stairs, and the creak of the door opening of the basement, and that when they went down there, that there was no one there.
The basement is not even just being a stereotypical like creepy kind of place. It is the hot spot of this case, I think, personally.
100%. But that's also a lot of demonic cases, it's always the basement because it's lower.
Yeah.
It's the lowest foundation in the house, which also kind of resembles and parallels with hell.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's just, it's a good, I guess, good rule of thumb. If a lot of activity in the house is, and it's dark activity,
mm-hmm.
and it's happening, the hot spot is lower. That's also...
Especially, I don't know, you might get into this, especially like with what they had down in the basement.
Right.
You might get into this, but...
So, I mean, they eventually find a bunch of stuff that kind of correlates to the basement. But Campbell, the grandmother, said she awoke one night and saw a shadow figure of a man pacing in the living room. She leaped out of bed to investigate and all she found once she got up was large wet boot prints. So that was, I guess, the first apparition they saw, and it was the grandmother who saw it. And they couldn't work out any details with the man. It was just more of like a shadow figure. But when they got down there, it was all that was left was wet boot prints walking throughout the house as if he'd been walking everywhere. And there was no one there, no doors open. Nobody intruded or anything like that. So, another incident that happened pretty recently after they moved in was in the bedroom. And the mom and the grandmother both woke up to the children screaming, mama, mama. And when they went to the room, the 12-year-old granddaughter had a friend in the room with her. They were spending the night. But the 12-year-old daughter was actually levitating above the bed and unconscious. And according to the events that were documented, as far as like once all the police department stuff got involved and different stuff, the way they got her to lower back to the ground is they just started praying over the daughter until she eventually just lowered by herself. I guess that would be insane to walk in there and you can't.
Yeah.
Because what are you going to do? I mean, you're so scared. You don't want to, like, touch her and pull her down.
Saying, but what the hell is controlling her?
You've been seeing apparitions, hearing footsteps, paranormal activity.
This one escalates quickly. Tony, dude, this one, like, gives me chills. Like, this is why I'm so excited that we do. Like, because Colin hit me up the other day. He's like, well, man, what are we going to start back on when you get back? And I just recently watched this documentary, and I was just like, it gives me chills when he keeps talking about this stuff. Because it's just like, this is one of the I don't get scared about much at all. This is one of the scarier things that I've, like, watched and like heard about, like with the stories and stuff, especially with all the people that claimed that it was so fake and all this stuff, and then you just start hearing more, and it's awesome. But
anyways, so the family went to the church because they were Christians, and the church pretty much just like I guess didn't pay much attention to it, which I guess is another.
And then they kind of blew them off because I.
Yeah.
So blew them off. Like, is a good so term. Like the last one that we did, like I kind of thought this was interesting. Like the last pod we did about the devil in Connecticut, how they kind of like the Catholic Church or whatever it was kind of turned against Ed and Lorraine. Like, I feel like that's sort of like a trend, like almost like they don't
right.
get involved with that stuff for whatever reason, which I mean, I say for whatever reason, it's demonic stuff. So, I mean, I guess you probably wouldn't want to, but
I get, I mean, it's easy to put blame on the church too, but imagine how many cases they get. They're yeah, just exactly. looking for all this publicity yeah. and money for books and stuff. And they're just making it up. They can't, yeah. they were to take every case. I mean, I don't want to say they shouldn't take it seriously, but if they were to go full bore with every case, it would be chaos.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
But anyway, so once the church blew them off, they eventually got in touch with some clairvoyants. And they had the clairvoyants come to the house. And this is when they first determined that it was demonic. And the clairvoyants came in the house and they said that there was over 200 demons in the house. And both two different clairvoyants confirmed this. That there was that many demons inside the actual house. And there was also ghosts, but the demons had full-out control of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to pay attention to the different stuff because it all relates and y'all's minds are going to be blown at the end of this. But so keep in mind, they're saying 200 demons at the very beginning, the clairvoyants are. The parallels to the different cases that just come into contact are absolutely amazing to me.
That's insane. When you told me about that, that was just insane.
I don't want to spoil it yet.
Yeah, so. I was about to say, we'll keep it.
No, okay, we'll just move on.
Yeah, we'll just move on.
So, the clairvoyants advised them the best thing they could do is move. Well, the family had put everything they had to get this house, and they couldn't move, which is also another characteristic of all these cases, man. They,
yeah, I know.
Oh, we can't move. Like, yeah, you could yeah, if you...
you can definitely move. Get the hell out of there.
Yeah, you definitely can.
I mean,
but
sell that thing. I mean, somebody will buy it.
Which I almost wonder if something like the actual paranormal stuff is playing... like almost contributing to them not to them saying they can't move, they've done everything, blah blah blah. Like, what if, like, any rational person would be like, yeah, I'm moving no matter what? So,
yeah,
what
it's
if
like they got control of them,
like a brainwash exactly type ordeal? But, anyways, so once they established they couldn't move, they did take some of the clairvoyance advice and they made an altar downstairs with I think it was Psalms 91 that was down there that they had the Bible
yeah,
open to
Bible and stuff all right, yeah.
and Mary and different stuff an altar downstairs in the basement where the activity was I guess the hot spot of it. And this is all just kind of like a Cliff Notes version of it, just because if we were to go through all the detail, it happened for so long that we'd be here all night.
It's insane.
But one of the daughters, after when she would go through this state, because like that wasn't after this first like episode of levitating and stuff, it started happening kind of frequently. And she said that she would feel weak, lightheaded, and warm when she was quote-unquote possessed. And her body would shake, and she said she felt like she was out of control. And that she was actually quoted in saying, "You can tell it's different, something supernatural." The youngest boy, who was 7 at the time, sat in the closet and would often be seen talking to a boy that no one else could see. And the other boy was describing what it felt like to be killed. So there's 3 kids. The oldest daughter was obviously possessed and levitating, and that's what she went through. The other boy was talking to someone who wasn't there. And the other one was describing what it felt like to be killed as if he had been killed before. So already it's escalating to something very, very
yeah,
dark.
Bad.
But anyways, she said, the grandma said that the 7-year-old once flew out of the bathroom as if he had been thrown, and a headboard once smacked into the Amon's daughter, causing a wound that needed stitches. So this is also, this is why this case was so well known, is because a lot of the stuff that was happening, they'd have to go to the hospital for.
And like they had the police involved, and the police like were literally horrified to be at the house. Like they didn't
right.
even, they had police officers quit and move to a different area because of this stuff, and because of the things that they got to experience with this case.
Yeah, and the thing that happened, I guess, when they were going to the hospital about all this different stuff, about the cuts, the bruises, whatever, DCS got involved. And DCS, because they obviously thought that there was some abuse going on. And that's also what contributed to, I guess, how well-documented this case was because mm-hmm. of the involvement of all the government officials and stuff yep. like that compared to just the church.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. But anyways, the 12-year-old would later tell mental health professionals that she sometimes felt as if she was being choked and held down so she couldn't speak or move. She said that her voice would say things to her family again and she wouldn't remember it. And she said she didn't feel like she was living again until after it was all over. She said she completely felt like something else was in control when she was saying things to her family and stuff like that, as if she was dead and watching from above, if that makes sense, which is absolutely unreal and crazy. But they ended up going to a doctor who, I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name just because I'm going to absolutely butcher it, but they went to the doctor to try and get help. And when this all happened is when, I guess, the publicity
took off.
Because,
and the witnesses that were there, too. Yeah. There's just no, I mean, they wouldn't just all lie. There's just no way.
Too many witnesses for it to be, I guess, a hoax, in my opinion, at least. But when they were at the doctor's office, the son started cursing at the, It said cursing.
He was speaking in different languages.
Yeah, speaking in different languages.
A lot like the one that we had talked about last week.
Cussing, raging at the medical staff. And the medical staff even said that the youngest boy was lifted and thrown into the wall with nobody touching him. And that's straight quotes from the actual case. But the boys eventually passed out and wouldn't come to, if that makes sense. And so someone in the doctor's office called 911. So it sounds like they were in a pediatrician, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm. I think they were at the regular hospital, to be honest with you. That's sort of what I gather, like, from watching the documentary and stuff. But it could be.
Maybe so, because what this says is that they were at a pediatrician's office, or not, it says doctor's office.
Yeah.
I'm guessing pediatrician, because they're kids. But, and then once the boys passed out, they called 911 and an ambulance came and took them over to the hospital once they passed out. So, I don't know.
This is
where it escalates.
Okay, yeah.
So
it did happen at the hospital, this part.
Right.
Yeah.
It was the Methodist Hospital campus in Gary. So, once they got to the hospital, the DCS was also alerted about all this. And they'd been on the case. DCS showed up and wanted to interview the children and the mother for possible child abuse and neglect. The caller, who was not named, who I guess reported it to the DCS, speculated that Amons might have been, the mother might have had a mental illness. So the person believed that the children were performing for the mother and she was encouraging their behavior. So she thought this was all a play and that the children were pretty much roped into doing all this, is what she initially believed. Well, while the DCS was interviewing the mom, the 7-year-old boy started growling and showing his teeth. His eyes rolled back in his head, and the boy locked his hands around his older brother's throat and refused to let go until the adults pried his hands open. So they literally, and it took several adults from what it says in the reports about all this. But later that evening, Washington registered nurse Willie Lee Walker brought the two boys into a small exam room for an interview. Campbell, the grandmother, joined them, and the 7-year-old boy stared into his brother's eyes and began to growl again. And he said, in quotes, "It's time to die. I will kill you," is what he said to his other brother. And the youngest boy spoke. While the youngest boy spoke, the older brother started headbutting the grandmother in the stomach. So one of them is threatening the other one, while one is headbutting the grandmother. So this is all kinds of crazy. Clearly,
that's just the beginning of the crazy.
Yeah,
right there.
Clearly possession at this point when they're doing this kind of stuff. Oppression, I think, is out of the window. I think they're about fully possessed at this point with this kind of stuff going on. But according to Washington, who Washington is the DCS reporter, according to her original report, an account corroborated by Walker, who was the nurse in the room, the 9-year-old boy had a weird grin and walked backwards up a wall to the ceiling. He then flipped over the grandmother, landing on his feet. He never let go of the grandmother's hand the entire time. This was witnessed by nurses, a DCS reporter.
And there's a psychiatric guy in there, too.
Correct, yeah. And completely walked up the wall backwards, not nothing like that.
Like some shit you see in like a movie.
Yeah. And completely flipped over the grandmother while smiling.
Yeah.
Which is, I gotta sit up for that. That's just so, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably hit that little kid, but
a little bastard.
I'd probably drop that little bastard. But anyways, less than a week later, so after all this, the DCS, they go through a whole spiel of DCS. They take the kids and they get them away from the house and to determine what the heck's going on, because even though that DCS reporter was there, she's verifying all this, the whole department isn't going to immediately jump to demonic and exactly. stuff. So about a week later, the two women went back to the house, and they were accompanied by the DCS family case manager, who was Washington, and she asked the Lake County police officer to come with her. Two officers, one each from Gary and Hammond Police Departments, asked to join them out of professional courtesy. So they return to the house to, I guess, verify what this mother is saying, and they also bring two police officers when they do this. The mother refused to go inside, but the grandmother agreed to accompany the group and the kid while the kids were still in DCS custody during all this. The main floor had three bedrooms and a living room, one bathroom, hardwood floors, and a small open-style kitchen. A door in the kitchen led to a basement with concrete floors directly under directly under the stairs leading down into the basement was the dirt floor. The concrete around it was jagged as though it had been broken to, like, reveal bare dirt, if that makes sense. The grandma told officers that demons seemed to emanate from beneath the stairs. That was, like, I guess the hot spot of the basement itself.
Like, they were where they would do, like, rituals, basically.
Right. So, anyways, some of the... During all this, while all this was going on, they're trying to document all this, conduct interviews on the parents, trying to see if it's child abuse going on or what. The police officers' electronics started to malfunction, and they even captured disembodied voices on their audio devices while they were recording, talking to the mother. Mm-hmm. So, which is EVPs, is electronic voice phenomena, is what they started catching all over their equipment.
That's the stuff that we put in on our investigations.
Some of the officers were taking photos of the house as far as evidence and stuff like that goes. In one of the photos, below the basement stairs, there was a cloudy white image. And in the upper right-hand corner, an officer enlarged the photo, and the cloud appeared to resemble a face in the actual mist that was in the upper right corner. So, after all this, the officers are getting pretty freaked out about all this. They left the house once they got done doing all these interviews and stuff. And once they left the house, Austin was one of the officers that was there, and he said that the garage and the Gary home refused to open to let them out. So they couldn't get out of the house at first. And even though the power was on everywhere else, the garage just wouldn't open, if that makes sense. Anyways, when he got going down the road, once he got to his house, the driver's seat in his car started moving backwards and forwards on its own while he was in it. Started, like, thrashing him in the car. It ended up breaking the motor in his seat. After this, he had to take it to and get it fixed at some auto place or whatever. But that was all over the documentary too, that one of the officers was talking about. He was, after he left the house, that kind of stuff started happening to him.
Insane stuff started happening to all the police officers, actually.
The grandmother, the mother, Austin, who was the police officer, and two other police officers from the initial visit ended up going back to the house on May 10th, 2012. Police officers visited after work hours, and they were joined by two Lake County officers with a police dog. So they ended up bringing a canine into it, and the DCS family case manager. So hold on 1 second, guys. Okay, so anyways, they ended up getting a different DCS case manager, because the original one, Washington, did not want to go back inside. She refused to go back. She gave up the whole case, and
she actually stopped and moved away.
Right.
And it's just crazy.
I'm not gonna try and pronounce this other name.
Like, she literally just, like, up and left her career.
Yeah, she quit. She moved after all this stuff started going on. That's how shook she was about all this. Yeah. But they ended up bringing a priest with them as well, because this is all, it's turning into something that's not, I guess, they're not trying to do evidence so much more as just help the family at this point. And the priest told the police that he wanted to check the dirt underneath the stairs for a pentagram or personal objects that might have resulted in why all this activity is going on in the house, trying to find an explanation. And he said that a pentagram might indicate demonic presence and possible portal to hell. And anyways, he said, or if someone had died in the house, they could maybe discover remains. They didn't know what they were going to find. One of the police officers dug a 4-foot by 3-foot hole beneath the stairs, and he ended up unearthing a pink press-on fingernail, a white pair of panties, a political shirt pin, and a lid for a small cooking pan, socks with the bottoms cut off below the ankles, candy wrappers, and a heavy metal object that looked like a weight for a drapery cord. And that was in the official police statement. All this stuff they found underneath the house, about 4 feet, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense unless you're maybe it belonged to the family that they were cursed or whatever. Because it was also confirmed after all this that satanic worshipers did go to the house before.
Yeah, before and there was people that lived in there prior to the Ammons too. So, and they also experienced stuff, which I'm going to leave to the pod to the documentary. Right. Y'all got to check out the documentary.
The DCS worker who is now on the case after the other one left, she states that when they unearthed this and they brought it into the room, that she almost had like she felt like she was having a panic attack and that she couldn't breathe, and she walked outside and she completely left the house. She wouldn't go back in after that. After she went through that panic attack, which was she had never experienced before, she walked out. But after all this was said and done, after she left the house and didn't go back in, she claims that she had a string of medical problems after visiting the home. A week after she visited the house for the last time, she said she got third-degree burns from a motorcycle she got third-degree burns from a motorcycle, and then within 30 days, she also broke 3 ribs jet skiing, mm-hmm. broke a hand when she hit a table, and then broke an ankle running in flip-flops. So after visiting the house, she had all this medical problems, which is also something that clearly...
And then one of the police officers went outside and slid on ice and cracked his head open, and he had to go to the hospital.
Right.
That almost made me laugh. Like, but it really did. Dead serious.
Chaz is 1-6, son of a bitch, guys.
that did happen, though, like, for real, in all seriousness.
The DCS reporter actually said that she had a lot of friends that stopped hanging out with her, thinking that something was attached to her, because all this stuff was starting to blow up on the news at this point.
Yeah, and this is all over the news, and the news is, like, blowing it up.
There's so many government officials that are experiencing this. So I mean,
and it sort of pissed me off, like, because like you'll see, like when you watch the documentary, they would like they literally would like add stuff in, like they would show like hoaxed photos of like quote unquote ghosts inside the house, which was kind of ridiculous, but that's the media for you. So
yeah, but anyways, the priest ended up performing a minor ritual in an attempt to like I guess help somewhat. Because it hasn't got approved by the Catholic Church to do the full-on exorcism, which in our last pod we discussed how that goes down or anything like that. But the priest told the Ammons to look up names of demons that were tormenting them. And, like, I guess when we say that, they're trying to find out characteristics of what's going on and trying to interpret names, because that can help when it comes to an exorcism to call out the demon's name. And he wanted those names because he planned to fight the demons during the exorcism with those names, as I said. The mom said she and a friend started looking up demons' names and online by searching for demons that reported, they're reported, like, I guess the same characteristics they were experiencing. And during this minor exorcism, the demon itself actually revealed its name through the 12-year-old daughter. She, the demon revealed its name, and you guys are never going to believe what this name is. And it was Beelzebub, which is the same name as, the devil in Connecticut. Also, tried to reveal to a clairvoyant.
As that it being more than one, than as like 40-something demons.
Yeah. So, in one case, it was like 40-something, this one is like 200, but the same characteristics are the same as what this demon does. And you also can remember that at the end of the podcast, of last week's podcast or whatever, Beelzebub claimed that he would do this again, and he clearly did. But anyways, the priest eventually got approval to perform the official exorcism, and he performed 2 English and the last one in Latin, and the last one was on June 2012 in a Maryville church. And after that last exorcism, everything kind of died down. The mom claimed she still had nightmares afterwards, and during this whole thing, when they kept what'd they keep? They kept something from the actual house. Oh, no, they wrote the demon's name down. That's what they did. They wrote the demon's name down, and they kept it on a piece of paper, and they said, if it continues, we're going to burn this in a like a holy church fire, holy Catholic fire or whatever. And that should eliminate it for good. And when she kept having the nightmares, they burned it, and everything, she said all the nightmares stopped. The children were fine after all these 3 exorcisms. It's also another thing that I think, it's not really mentioned, but I think it definitely has something to do with it, that somehow after the 3rd exorcism,
it all seems to come to light or whatever. And that's also the three, I think, is significant. It's
just that steady progression of working it out of the person that has it in them.
But I think there's something to do with the number three, like how...
Almost like you like counteract their three.
Yeah, you counteract. Because, I mean, they're mocking the Trinity when the three knocks or whatever. Well, I think on the third exorcism, it's like the Trinity. And I think it just has a little bit more power, I guess, than the rest of them.
Very well be the case.
That's pretty much it for, I guess, the actual family before Zach gets there. That's the case that Zach, that was all over the news, mm-hmm. that led Zach over to investigate the actual house.
And we were kind of going to talk about that. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to leave that to y'all. I want y'all, like, as viewers to go watch this. I don't even want to give it away. I think that this is, it's one of the, I've never been hooked to the TV like I was when I watched this. I don't know if you felt the same way.
It's you remember crazy.
I just personally, like, we'll like go over it the next one. Like, we'll kind of fill it in on the next one. But I'm just going to kind of leave that at that and go look it up on YouTube. It's free to watch, and it is not disappointing.
His investigation that he does, the stuff they get, is absolutely crazy.
And it's just, it's unexplainable.
He ends up at the end of the documentary destroying the house because he thought it was too dangerous. He owned it. He bought it. And he actually destroyed the house, but he did keep some of the stuff in the house. He kept the stairs, a few other artifacts from the house, mm-hmm. some dirt from the actual floor underneath the underneath the stairs.
Big old buckets.
Yeah, and it's now in his haunted museum in Las Vegas. And like just like the Devil's Rocking Chair. And it is one of the most active exhibits in the entire museum. A lot of the guides, I was listening to a podcast with the guides, a lot of the guides refuse to even tour in that room. They won't go to it. Too much bad stuff happens to them when they're in that room. This is the other thing, guys. They still claim to see the shadow figure with the wet boots in the museum. I listened to the guide of a bunch of people who go to that museum. And
you got to go out there?
Yeah,
really
too.
Need to go out there.
I've got to.
I went to Vegas a couple years ago, but we just didn't have time to go over to that area. Me and Colin are going to go at some point. We have to.
You got to do it. Oh, mm-hmm. my. I want to go to it so badly. Just to experience it. I mean, it's like an hour and... hour and 30-minute tour of all this different stuff, and that's what they say. They turn so many skeptics into believers in this museum just because you're so likely to experience something paranormal in the museum, and sometimes you don't because, I mean, it's just about whatever the spirits want to do that day.
But
they just say, I mean, the stuff that goes on in that museum is absolutely nuts, especially around this exhibit in particular. It's just nuts, and I also think that Zach himself, when they investigate the museum, he actually doesn't investigate the this exhibit that much, and I think he's so afraid of it.
It's dark. I'm telling you, that's why I don't even want, I want like y'all to go watch. It's like if you're not into dark stuff, then maybe it's not for you.
Dude, I watched this by myself.
I was about to say, if you don't mind, it's just incredible. Like we all have different preferences and stuff, and like we're really, really into this stuff. But I've never been, like, hooked. Like, I've never just, like, for an entire, like, movie, anything, just, like, kept my eyes just, like, so freaking on the screen, dude. It was, like, every single thing was just, like, holy shit, dude. Like, no way that just happened.
Holy
shit. It's just freaking, it's awesome. I know. Holy shit. It's just awesome. I mean, that's the only way I can really describe it. It's, like, y'all have to go watch it. And it's just, if you just pull up Demon House, Zach Bagans, it's going to pull right up on YouTube. And I think it's an hour and 24 minutes, and it is well worth the time to watch.
And I guess I want to say this about one thing that I think is probably the craziest thing about all this. A lot of the objects that Zach gets in his museum is he claims that he doesn't even look for them, all these haunted objects. He says that they find him, if that makes sense. And this house in particular, he states that he had a nightmare about the house before he even heard about the case or whatever. And in the nightmare, he saw this house that he didn't recognize, and that there was a 12-foot-tall goat man standing in the house.
Mm-hmm. Which, for anybody that obviously knows about demons, that's very, very well known as a demon.
Right. Also correlates with...
the devil and everything.
It correlates with stuff. What they claim to see in Beelzebub.
Yeah, Beelzebub, exactly.
And how they saw the old man transform into some type of creature with goat horns and hoofs. Well... Zach said he saw this goat man and that he breathed black smoke out and that it went into Zach's lungs. And after that, the next day he saw on the news about the house, and it was just so coincidental That's the real reason. After the family moved out of the house and sold it, he bought it right away.
Just outright, just went and bought it.
So, I thought that whole thing was just absolutely crazy, and how like it all comes together like that. But,
I mean, this is all stuff, like we said, this is all stuff that you have to, I mean, you have to watch it, first of all. This is all stuff you're going to see. I mean, it's going to go in depth with it. And we'll touch on it, obviously, next time on the next podcast. But it's something that I don't want to give anything away. It's so good, man. It's just really good. You have to watch it.
It's a pretty good documentary.
Not to hype it up so much, but you got to.
Yeah.
But.
Can't answer that right now,
Jonas
guys.
Brothers?
That's a little burning it up.
Man.
Burning it up in the podcast, hey, I guess.
What else you got in there? Some good stuff in there, don't you?
Got a little bit of Maroon 5. She Will Be Loved.
You have any Fergie in there?
I definitely got some Fergie. I think I have more pictures of Fergie than songs. I don't really know what that's about. She doesn't know.
That's probably better.
Yeah.
But she doesn't.
And it's I don't know. I don't really know how she doesn't know, because Fergie is not my profile picture on Twitter, but the picture behind it.
The cover photo.
The cover photo, yeah. That's a good way to describe it.
She's gorgeous, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that hard to Photoshop yourself in there with her. It's really not.
I guess you'd be pushing it if you maybe like did like one where she's like laying on like a waterbed or something, and you're on it with her or something like that.
I think that's definitely definitely reasonable, and I don't think any girlfriend would get mad about that. Honestly,
I don't either. I mean, she's a great artist.
That's really the only reason I like her so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Shakira.
I mean, you know, someone else who's really good at art, Mia Markova. That's something we can talk about another day.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know where that name came from, guys. That's just something that popped up on my Twitter feed.
That's fun. It's sometimes they just pop up as ads, on Twitter. I saw some dipshit ad come up the other day. It was like dropping Drake or something. I was like, what the hell is this, man?
God, dude, did I mention that Chaz is now a Gamecock? he's a mighty South Carolina Gamecock.
Get this. All right, get this. We're going to get a little bit explicit right here, but I got to do this for the story. So, in all seriousness, this is like, if anybody obviously knows me, they obviously know, especially the football podcast, huge Georgia fan. I go to all the games. So, we've been to South Carolina numerous times. South Carolina is the worst fan base that I've ever been a part of, like, as going to a football game. They will stand, I don't think I've even told Colin this, I might have. They will literally stand outside the gates before the game, and they'll just scream, kids, 80-year-old people, and they'll just sit outside and just say, fuck you, Georgia, before the freaking kickoff. I'll never forget going there for the first time, and when they started doing that, it's like an annual thing now. Like, whenever we go there, it's like every 2 years we go there. Every time. It's like I don't even understand.
They're just cocks, dude.
They are, man. They're just freaking cocks. I mean,
what do you expect?
We're going to have to get Jacob Olsen on here one time to see what he thinks about it.
Yeah, he's a real cock. Oh, man, for anybody who doesn't know.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, I'm pumped. I'm so excited for things like sports to start back, dude. Like,
I'm excited for fucking deer season. I love sports just as much as the next guy, but, which I'm excited for. I don't know. I don't really know what they're going to do. What's the latest with all this corona stuff?
So, like,
with all that?
Well, so, Major League Baseball starts Friday. The Braves.
They're doing it? Are they doing fans?
No.
So.
Hell no. They did. All right, get this, dude. The Mets the other night. The Mets played the Yankees on ESPN. It was, like, just, like, an exhibition game. And they have, like, they have like, these cardboard cutouts that they put behind home plate in the seats. And so, one of them, there's, like, people that, like, fan sentiment, and they said they had, like, a couple who were, like, angry-ass, like, New Yorker, like, faces, like going like that, like, pointing at the umpires or whatever. And then they had, like, a dog sitting in the chair who was one of the cardboard cutouts. It's getting pretty desperate, man. But
dude, yeah, I'm ready for WWE to get some fans back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping they get fans back by SummerSlam. But by the looks of it, I think it's going to all go back to how it was a couple months ago, or at least a month ago, I think.
Fans with wrestling, dude, is what makes wrestling what it is. I mean, really, for sports in general. Like college football, like, I love it to death. It's my favorite thing in the world. But, I mean, even that's going to be fucking weird, dude.
I don't know how it's going to work.
It does not go anywhere.
I halfway wish they just keep it not doing until
Push it back to like spring or something.
I don't know. I think it'd be better than do. I kind of wish WWE just did that. Maybe like took a break instead of.
Yeah, maybe.
Instead of not doing it without fans. I don't know. It's just not. It's still fine to watch. It's just unless there's something specific you're watching. I don't know if I can sit through a whole show anymore.
Most people gave up on WWE like 10 years ago. Which,
yeah. Well, those aren't true fans anyways.
Yeah. Freaking
douchebag. They're about the equivalent to a Gamecock. So.
Yeah. Or a Tiger, Clemson Tiger. I've got to deal with those two. You forget about that. I'll be right in the. Where I'm moving is like an hour up the road from Clemson.
Dude, I hope you get jumped.
I probably will, dude. It's in Greer. I mean, Greer's a decent place.
I hope someone holds you down while they grab Tori, and I hope they just wear her ass out.
With like a belt.
Yeah, or a big branch.
Almost got you. Oh my God.
God. Chaz's girlfriend's Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, especially when she wears a headband.
Jesus. She got one just like Jeff Hardy. I don't know where she found it, actually.
I gotta like let her know that she's Jeff Hardy. Because I don't know if she knows that she is or not.
I think it's better if she doesn't know.
Just let it ride.
I mean, she doesn't know yet, and she clearly am, so.
Yeah. Kind of like. Once she starts coming out and like doing the dance, that's when I'll know that I need to tell her. Especially if the music kicks in out of nowhere. Then like it'll really, then I'll know. I'll be like, I need to tell her that she's Jeff Hardy.
I think the moment.
Because I don't even think that Jeff Hardy knows that she's actually Jeff Hardy.
I think the moment that I knew that she was, I guess, a current reincarnation of Jeff Hardy is when we were all at the pool and we're all doing like, you know, a cannonball competition, who could do the best move, blah, 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 mm-hmm. Real lame stuff. And she
comes flying out of nowhere and does a swanton.
Perfect. Perfect form.
And it's like one of the, it's like he does, like. He like she did like the front flip, but like where her back like also hit the, it just skid across the water, like it was a competitor.
other than
we kept that going longer than I thought we'd be able to keep that one going.
Yeah,
that was good.
Other than Chad's stepmom telling us to be quiet the whole time while we were trying to do these swimming pool moves, it was all day. It was one of the best days we've had all together.
Run through that story about the freaking Edge thing. For people that are still tuned in, thank you for listening to this bullshit that we're talking about.
Yeah, I bet we lost all of our viewers at this point.
Yeah, we're out of here.
But so when in the Royal Rumble this year when Edge came back, I was watching over here at Chaz's house. He wanted to watch it here. He wouldn't let, I don't know. We went through this whole thing with WrestleMania too. Same ordeal. And when Edge made his return after 9 years and the crowd pop, the best crowd pop I've heard in WWE in a long time, I couldn't even be a part of it at the house because we had to keep it down. People had to work in the morning. Okay, his stepmom and his dad. And that's something I'll never forgive him for. Plain
simple. Hold on. I'm gonna be honest with you. If that's not the best theme song, then what is?
What are you
doing?
Who
has a better? Who has a better one? Triple H is good.
I think Edge is my all-time favorite theme song. Just song wise, it's just it's the
especially
best.
When he hits that slick back hair when he starts getting dirty.
Second, and when I say second, I mean a close second would be Triple H.
He comes in and humps the ring. You know it's about to be a match.
The way he just kissed Lita just always got me.
Yeah.
No one kisses like Edge, according to JR.
Yeah, you know Conrad. Nobody kisses like Edge.
Dude, I was listening to their podcast the other day. And it was Conrad and JR, and they were talking about Triple H. Sometime in his feud, it was during his feud with Cena or whatever, when he went to WrestleMania and had those huge mutt chops or whatever, and how he did it as a tribute to somebody when he did the mutt chops
the
or whatever.
Rock. Wasn't it?
And no, he did it to like one of his guys that he actually did a lot of his moves from back in the day, like where he got a lot of his knees and stuff.
Dang, you know, like the one that he came up with, you mean? Like looking up to?
Yeah.
Yeah, I freaking know exactly.
It's like Harley or
Harley,
something.
Yeah, he just died recently.
Yeah. Harley something. Anyways, they were talking about how Triple H did that. And JR said, actually, a friend of the podcast, he's actually rocking those those chops right now. And then Conrad.
Harley Race.
Conrad chimed in, interrupted, and said, "Yeah, but such and such looks like a real idiot." And it was the funniest thing I've ever heard on their podcast. It's like, yeah, such and such a.
I mean, that part right there, dude, when he comes out, and he comes out of the curtain quick, and he comes out like he is ready to smack your mama's ass, and he, when he slides into the ring and starts humping it, there's something special about that, dude, especially when he throws up the rock and roll signs and the fireworks go off behind him. There's just something special about that.
Dude.
Don't you think?
Not as special as a Spinneroonie.
God, I love a good Booker T Spinneroonie.
All right, guys. Sorry for all that rambling.
I quite frankly thought that was really good.
It's all true stories, so
it's 100% true story.
What we're trying to get at, the moral of all this is to watch the damn documentary.
Yeah, I mean, it's free, for God's sakes. It's not like the WWE Network. That's $9.99 a month.
Either watch it or you're a douchebag. In my eyes,
I mean, you might as well just subscribe to the WWE Network. I guess that we could maybe get them to sponsor us at some point.
We will be professional wrestlers if ghost hunting doesn't turn out.
We're gonna be a tag team, but. I guess that's besides the point, though, I guess, at the end of the day.
Well, I think one podcast, I don't want to do it on this one, because I think the only person we got left is the person who fell asleep listening to this, but yeah. The one podcast is coming up. I want us to go over our tag team idea and who we want to be.
Here's the thing. The fact that it's not already a tag team is just asinine. What?
Maybe next week.
It's something. We're going to have to get Paul Heyman
to
be over it.
Maybe next week we'll reveal the bulldozers.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
But
regardless, you jackasses need to watch the documentary. I just want you guys to watch the documentary, please. Whatever you guys do, just watch it. In all seriousness, watch the fucking podcast. Dude, it's so good. I know I've been like hyping it up. You would think it's like a 5-star movie, but it's so sick. Like, I don't, like, to me, I think if you're hooked, it's like on a freaking, like, if you watch something and you like can't take your eyes off of it, is that not 5 stars? I mean, I feel like it is.
It's not even that good.
Oh, dude, what the hell?
All right,
you're like, it's kind of good. No, dude, it's pretty good. No,
yeah, it's
freaking good, dude.
I definitely check it out, guys.
Okay, here's the thing, dude. Before we go, why is AJ Styles' theme song not the one he had in TNA?
So much. I mean, better. It's not bad.
I mean, dude, it's so good.
AJ Styles is probably one of my favorite guys in WWE right now.
We're gonna pick this up next week, guys.
All right, guys. Sorry about all this. Thank y'all for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah, maybe. We'll catch you when we're going. You know what I mean? It's our podcast. It's a great song.
Just want to take a second of this episode to give a quick shout out to Droppin' Drake Southern Apparel. Established right here in Georgia by one of our very close colleagues and Colin's brother, Austin Hendricks. You can check out droppingdrake.com to see all kinds of Southern apparel ranging from hats, shirts, hunting equipment that you need to make your attire the best attire. Message Colin and I or visit the Droppin' Drake Instagram page and website for more information. And thanks for listening to Grab the Mic.